You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
That you're awesome. I'm glad I'm not a possum, cause I'm awesome. And that's awesome with Joe.
Hey everyone, what's up? Welcome to episode 31 of That's Awesome with Joe. I'm your host, Joe. Not a ton to talk about today, but I just want to introduce our interview before we send it over to that discussion. Today we have on Philip from the band Normandy. I had to do this interview at like 7 in the morning, I think it was, my time, because they are a band from Sweden. It was actually Josh that had discovered this band. I think he said that he found them on YouTube, and he's been a big fan ever since. I listened to it when he sent it to me, and I remember enjoying it, but I just didn't go back to it for some reason. And then right before the interview, I listened to it a bunch, and it's awesome. Like, I have been nonstop listening to it. Really, really, really talented songwriter. So a younger band with a ton of potential. They're already getting the attention of pretty much everyone in the industry. So I think you'll probably be hearing more from them soon. And they do have an album dropping this week. I believe it's tomorrow even. We mentioned that in the interview as well. So make sure you check that out. You can find the link to that. We'll throw that in our bio or in the description of the episode. Yeah. So I will send it right on over to the interview with Philip from Normandy.
This is hell, ashes of a fantasy. We were chasing down a dream, but now waving a white flag. So will you let it rest in peace? Let it be just a fading melody in your head. Cause I am waving a white flag. I am better without you.
From Normandy, Philip, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me. I'm trying, like, as I speak, I'm trying to update my parking ticket. Sorry about that. Okay, cool.
It's yeah, all good. So, Philip, before we start, why don't we just, if you could just give a brief introduction of who you are, what your band is, where you're from, you know, all the boring stuff that we just got to get out of the way.
All right. I am from IKEA land, Sweden, sometimes referred to as Switzerland. And I play and I sing and I produce and I mix a band called Normandy. And I don't know, we're kind of not a big deal at the moment. We are sort of breaking through, and we received some praise from people that you should receive praise from to become something, I guess. And it's like, we're in the, I don't know. I can feel something coming, and I'm happy.
This
about
is
it,
our, so, I can yeah, already tell this is going to be a great interview.
All right, cool.
All right. So let me ask you this. Why is everyone from Sweden so good at writing songs?
Because Max Martin. No, I don't know. No, do you know who that is? Yeah.
Of course, yeah, dude. I like worship that guy.
No, I guess it's like, I don't know. We have a beautiful nature and a lot of time and a lot of space from other people. So it's like, what should we do with all this inspiration?
Everyone born in Sweden just has like, is born with just the perfect pop sensibility.
I'm not gonna lie. I think every single time we go on tour, people tell us that when we speak Swedish, it sounds like we're singing. So I guess we have a bit of an advantage on that part.
Maybe it's a musical language.
Maybe it is. I'm trying to figure out like what Swedish sounds like to foreign ears. And
give me some Swedish sentences. I don't even know if I know what it sounds like.
All right. So it's like, I'm not going to speak, you know.
You
I'm
can talk shit about
anything.
Me and I won't
no,
even
no,
know.
No, no, it's fine. Så här låter det när man pratar svenska. Och det låter ungefär som att man pratar Whoa. I melodier. Och det är väldigt mycket upp och ner.
All right, that is so what I expected.
Not at all?
No.
Okay.
I actually really like that.
Wow. Yeah, you should hear Danish. It's sort
Danish.
Of the same, but without all the consonants. So it's like, oh,
yeah. Right. It sounds almost like I've always said, and I don't mean this in like a negative way at all. Mm-hmm. It sounds very negative, but I've always like French and Danish just kind of sound like drool.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to date this Danish girl, and yeah, it was like becoming an issue, and I really, really tried, and.
That's
after,
hilarious.
Yeah, after a while, it was just, should we skip into English? Because, I don't know, I don't want to keep asking, like, can you repeat that? You know,
yeah.
I actually learned some Danish. So I understand Danish very well right now. But, for some reason, they don't understand us. So,
It's a similar language, though.
It is. And we use the same words, but they don't use letters.
Gotcha.
No, it's like, yeah, it sounds so weird.
All right. Well, cool, man. Let me give you a little background of for what we know of your band, Normandy.
Okay.
I really got to give Josh credit here. Josh is my quote unquote producer of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he discovered you guys. Josh, was it just through YouTube you had said?
Yeah. The White Flag live session came up in my YouTube feed and it was like, you guys are just insane. Like I watched this and I was
Thank
obsessed.
You.
So,
I have to be honest here too. Like Josh sent me a video. I listened to it and I remember saying this is dope. And then, honestly, I kind of forgot about it. But
like you
then,
do, we have like the we can focus for about what is it 30 seconds? Or
yeah,
30
I know.
Minutes maybe, I don't know.
But once Josh booked you guys for the interview, I went back and listened, and dude. I fucking love your band. It's so
Thank
good.
Thank
like
you.
The new songs are great. Like me and Josh were texting about it this morning. It's just really fucking good. And
I'm
like,
do you have
like
a favorite from the new album? Like I'm not gonna put you on a spot here.
I do.
You're like
I love Babylon.
Oh, sick.
I fucking love that song. Like that.
Thank you.
It's so great. And I like, you know, the triplet feel and the swing time, and it
we
just
had
feels
to get
so
that
good.
In. Yeah.
And the chorus, just like the melodically is fantastic.
It's a good song. And it's for me, it's a bit of a relief live, I think, as well, because it's a bit lower in my register. So it's, you know, it's going to be really cool to see the dynamic of the new set list that we start, you know, working on right now for the tour in October. And I think it sounds so weird. The tour in October, it's such a long time left. Okay.
Dude,
but we start
crazy.
Figuring out the flow of the set list. And Babylon is like a high energy, low vocal song.
Yeah.
So for me to have that, I could put it like anywhere in the set list. And it's a bit of a relief for me singing wise. But like, you know, for a momentum of the entire set list, it could be a big booster. So I love that song for that reason as well. Apart from being a good song.
As a singer, I know why you love it, for sure. But the energy in it is just great. Like, I'm a big fan of the feel in general of that song. I'm like a huge nerd for songwriting stuff, so we'll probably nerd out
Me
on
too.
That a bunch.
Yeah.
So let's go back, though, because I want to... Man, you mentioned a tour, and that's all I want to talk about, but I'm restraining. I'm restraining. We'll get to it. Let's go backwards. So I know you started the band in 2013. I did my research. Mm-hmm. I know things.
Yeah.
What was going on before that? Were you in bands before that and stuff, or was this kind of your first endeavor?
No, I think I started like... I went on stage the first time when I was 13, I guess, so like 14 maybe. And I played this beautiful flying V kind of shaped guitar, playing Metallica stuff. Mm-hmm. Had, you know, braces and all that good stuff. And then I started a band called Naked Conspiracy.
That is so good.
And then, yeah,
that's a really good one.
We always have good videos of that.
Oh, yes. I'm going to have to look them up. We have to. We always have people share their first band names. That's a top three. What was it again? Naked Conspiracy?
Naked Conspiracy. I hesitated for about 5 seconds. You know, that's the language barrier for you. If you call your band Naked Conspiracy, you probably aren't, you know, English isn't your native tongue.
That is fantastic.
Let me put it that way.
And were you, this is an interesting question. I feel like, were you writing songs in English back then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Is that standard for you guys?
Oh, it's standard. Well, it depends on what audience. I've never heard a Swedish metalcore band. So, no. Yeah, that's mainly. I think it's because the entire, influence is coming from English. So, it would be weird to have a Swedish. I don't know. It's a good question.
It's weird, though, because I see, when we tour Europe and stuff or whatever, we have, Italian metalcore bands and...
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. But I guess you're right. The further north you go, there's less, language diversity. It's true, right?
Yeah, but Sweden is a very international country. And we were taught English from age, I don't know, 9 up to, forever. And it's almost it feels more laid back to call it a second language. But I feel that it's almost taking over at least my life, because obviously I'm spending time songwriting on the day, and then on evenings I'm watching Netflix, and then I'm doing these PR calls, and our entire label team are based in the UK. So I would actually argue that maybe 80% of my daily work and communication is in English, which is pretty weird. I don't know why that is, but
well, it is what it is. Whatever.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So you were playing local in smaller bands, mostly metal stuff.
Yeah. And then I actually flew over to the UK and I joined a band there. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And that's when Maria, our manager in Normandy, when she reached out to me and she's like, okay, so there's a bunch of bands quitting now in Sweden. And I want to, all the bands that she was working with all quit at the same time, kind of.
Wow.
So she was like, I'm tired and sick and, I'm sick and tired of this. I want to handle and manage a band that I feel can be something in the long run. Because this is, you got to take that into consideration, that when people become, 20 to 23 or something, if you want to go all the way with rock music, you got to either... quit everything else and focus on rock music, or quit rock music and start focusing on whatever, university or stuff like that. You can't really do it half and half if you want to really build something for the next 40, 50 years, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an all-in kind of thing. Yeah.
And the momentum is sort of, today you can be a pop writer and still have a daytime job or whatever, because you can still gain momentum through TikTok or Instagram. But as a rock artist, you need to get out there, tour, and really build a fan base, which I'm thankful for now. But sometimes you wish that rock and roll was, the big thing right now.
Yeah.
But it might be coming back.
It's interesting now. I feel like it is kind of transitioning to
a little
that.
Bit, yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of songwriting and I write for a lot of other rock bands and stuff. And I don't know, it just feels like it's becoming a little more commonplace to have more collaboration with people that are just literally sitting in their office, just working out stuff. But I know what you mean. Rock has always been a DIY kind of vibe, even at a high level, right?
It's
people
hustle.
Pride themselves on that.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool, even bands like Parkway Drive, right? That band has been self-managed their entire career.
Yeah, but they're all huge. Have side hustles as well. They own a cafe or a management company and blah, blah, blah.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah, and I know that architects, they quit their daytime job after album, 5. So it's you need to understand that you know, as a pop artist, you can break through with one song and then the label can like give you advances until you're dead, basically. But right. as a rock band, you sort of don't have that opportunity unless you sign with Sony for some reason.
Right.
Like there's not going to be any label out there that's going to give you $1 million to live from the next 10 years, you know?
No, and if there are, a big gamble. We got to find them so we can get it.
Yeah.
So let's go back. So you went to the UK, joined a band.
Joined the band, got the text from Maria, our manager. She's like, yeah, I want to put together this band that's never going to quit. And that's actually going to become something from Sweden, blah, 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 break through the mold, all that good stuff.
So this was kind of a project that was conceived before members were even involved.
Oh, yeah. It was a bit of a like a super band or whatever you want to call it. Like not yeah. that us members were anything else than just ordinary people, but it was
but
a way
you were
for her
specifically
to like,
selected.
Yeah, I was doing these YouTube cover videos and I think I had something like 20,000 subscribers and like I was actually doing I was actually doing something. And then like the drummer was another cool dude and the guitarist had been in two bands that have been touring Sweden for a while. So it's like instead of building from scratch, she wanted to find a way to just, you know, jumpstart a project. Right. So we started that. We were six members, and a couple years later, we were three. But you know, people leave
because
they don't like, yeah, they don't like touring, or they don't think it's going to be there in the long run, or economically.
Was it that
safe.
Like that? They didn't like the touring.
Yeah, like the first two members left because they either like missed their girlfriends, didn't like touring. Like right. the touring that I'm talking about is like, you know, six boys in a bus,
right,
sweating through five types of underwear in about 5 weeks.
Yeah, you're roughing
like,
it.
Yeah, and you know, you get home to your girlfriend, it's just like questioning your entire existence, basically.
Dude, I did that for a very long time before joining this band, so I totally get it.
Yeah, and that's when you quit. Unless you see the big waves coming up, then you basically quit.
Well, you know, I kind of think it's interesting to talk about, like, quote-unquote, you know, the touring lifestyle and how some people love it and some people don't. But I do think that, like, you know, because I've experienced many different levels of touring. You know, I've been playing for 10 people a night and now I'm playing for 2,000 a night or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's totally different experiences. But the things that are hard about it, there's a lot of common ground everywhere. And it's not necessarily like not having the money or not having like a bunk and everything. And those are like really great things, but like the being away from home and, you know, the idle time where you're not sure what to do and being in a different parking lot every day, I love it, but I can see how people get burnt out on it very, very quickly. And a lot of people, like aspiring musicians, don't realize or don't fully grasp the concept of what it is to be on tour. Like, it's not like a party all the time. It can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not all the time.
I'm a bit divided if I like it or not. And I am getting more and more into like a bit of a luxury touring situation. And I like, because I like my own space. I like being alone very much.
I do too. I do too.
So as long as I can have that, and like the past tours we've done have been in nightliners, and it's been a nice thing to just being able to, you know, just cover the like the curtains and just put in a headphone and sleep throughout the day because you're moving all the time. So instead of, you know, having that self drive, because that's hustling really. To drive overnight to the next venue to then just have a sandwich and start playing again. That's
what was the what was the roughest tour?
The roughest tour. We bought a van for about €3,000, so $3,000 kind of. Not a sustainable situation. We started touring and it was about 3 weeks in, and the tour itself was about 4 weeks. So we were coming into the finish, and yeah, the van just quit on us first in Slovenia, and we had to spend the night in -10°C. And then we got it fixed the day after. But you know, like sometimes if you're asking to get the van fixed at 11 in the night, and somebody doesn't, like, they don't speak your language and they just see a pile of cash, you're not going to get your van fixed properly. So the day after it broke down again, we slept another night in minus 10 degrees. I lost my voice, apparently, like, you know, obviously, and we had to cancel for the rest of the tour. So we were like, okay, but that's a bummer. And then we drove home and the van broke down on the way home in Switzerland. And in Switzerland, everything is expensive.
Yeah.
And so even like, you know, trying to get it fixed would be 3,000 more euros. And even like, even we considered trashing the van, like just, you know, leave it to a, what do you call it? Demolisher?
Yeah, a dump or something.
Yeah, just dump it. But that would be more expensive. That would be like 4,000 euros.
God, that sucks.
Yeah. So the deal we made was with a car dealer in Sweden. We were like, you can get the car for free if you fly down with a mechanic and just fix it and drive it home. And our insurance covered us so we can get like rental cars and drive home. And that entire tour is just like just a big fucking mess. And it's one out of maybe three similar situations we've been in. So like,
yeah,
we've had really bad van stories, which is why I sleep so well in a Nightliner nowadays.
Yeah, we've had those too. The amount of times that we've had a mechanic fix our van on the side of the road, or we had to get a new transmission put in before a show, like all that kind of shit is just, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, and it's, like I have a regular car now when I drive back and forth to the studio, and like every single time that a service lamp or light comes on, it could be like the, you know, the washing fluid is out and the service lamp come out, I'm like, fuck in hell, like I have shivers down my spine.
Yeah, I literally just went through that last week. I had to dish out a big chunk of change for my car. It sucked.
Oh my god. Yeah,
having a car sucks, but sometimes you need it.
But the, I could just finish up the story about Normandy. And so we released the first album, and a label in the States contacted us and was like, oh, we want to sign you. We know the album is out. Can we delay it here in the States? Oh, yeah, it was about 2 weeks before the album was out, Ingus, the first album.
Got it.
We released it in the States and self-released in the rest of the world, and it picked up momentum and went really well. I think it streamed about, like the entire album streamed something like 10 million. And then we were contacted by the label that we're signed to right now, which is called Easy Life Records. Mm-hmm. And they're like ex-Sony and stuff like that. So, and now they've handled White Flag and now Dark and Beautiful Secret. So, and I think like there's been some, you know, pivotal moments where we've seen some actual progress. And like one of them was when we were main support for Yellow Card, the old legendary Yellow Card.
That's huge.
You know, soundtrack to all the amped games that I played when I was a kid, playing snowboard. So main support, not even opening, but main support in throughout Europe in front of 4,000 people every night. And that's when we had one album, and we just came from these situations where we had to, you know, we left the car in Switzerland, and the next tour we were playing in front of 4,000 people. So
That's pretty nuts, huh?
You know, you need some of the light to be able to see, you know, to look further than the broken down car.
And How did you end up on that tour?
We were friends with the other, like, they were doing this world tour, and they did the States and Asia, I think, and Australia, and then Europe. And the band that was supposed to be main support in Europe are friends of ours, and they're called Like Torches, and they were good friends with Yellow Card. Mm-hmm. Whatever, but they couldn't do the European legs, so they just mentioned to Ryan Key that, oh, you should bring Normandy instead, that's another Swedish act. And it's like, yeah, sure, this sounds cool. And he contacted us, and to really seal the deal, we flew him over to Sweden to hang out and, like, you know, write some music, barbecue and whatever. And so Ryan was with us for about 3 days before he flew back to the States.
Nice. That's
and
pretty
that,
cool.
That kind of sealed the deal. That's the first time I actually networked, and it worked.
Yeah. It's a pretty weird feeling, isn't it?
It is so weird, but
yeah.
I mean, this is things that you got to do to make it work. Yeah. Otherwise,
yeah,
you're just
sure.
releasing music to nobody. You need to start networking and making sure that you actually reach people.
You get it. I'm trying to tell my buddy that. I'm like, dude, you can't keep releasing music to just your friends. You got to find new people to hear it.
Yeah.
It's like, stop releasing shit and focus on finding people to show it to.
Yeah, you're wasting songs. You're wasting good songs. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. That's pretty sick, though. Yellow Car, that was their farewell tour?
Yeah, it was the farewell tour.
Damn,
which means
dude,
that every single
tour.
Night was just hyped. It was so
yeah.
hyped.
How was the response?
Great. I mean, it was Germany and England, and everybody told us, like, oh, the UK is going to suck for you. They don't like new people, kind of, just, you know, just as a reference point for whatever we're going to experience for the next week. But we flew out, and we did, like, some legendary venues, like the Shepherd's Bush, like, in London, which is, four floors, kind of like an opera house. And
very cool.
We managed to do the Ritz in Manchester and Palladium in Cologne, and that was like 4,500 indoors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wild.
That was amazing. I'm going to save some of the tour stories for later because it wasn't all good and nice. It was also a bit of a, like, we weren't ready for that tour, to be honest. But
Got it. A learning experience.
Learning while doing in front of 4,000 people, for
right.
sure.
Yeah, been there. Yeah. What's your favorite country to tour in?
I think the UK has become a favorite to me because everybody told us that it shouldn't work, but it's, you know, it's just the best.
I think
that
I agree
and Germany.
With you. Sorry? Dude, I was going to say, Germany, I think, is my number one.
Yeah, but Germany is like you expect it to be crazy, and then it is crazy. So it's like, yeah,
I guess
sure,
you're right.
It's really
like,
nice,
but whenever
the UK
we tour there,
shows, yeah, but when we play like London and it becomes mosh mania and like crowd surfs throughout the entire set, that's like when you actually start, you know, questioning whether we have something special or if London has sort of exceeded their, you know, all the expectations, and it's really cool.
So I think Germany, for me, I'm a little bit biased because our first headliner in Europe, we didn't take out any support. It was just us. Mm. And actually, we added a band. The name of it is escaping me. Awake the Dreamer. And I think they're from Sweden.
Yeah, I know them.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
We had them on like 5 or 6 days of that after tickets were already sold and everything. But we were just like, we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And Germany is just, I couldn't believe the response with no support and shows selling out before.
Where'd you play? What city?
I can't remember. The best, it was actually at the time, it was our biggest, most attended headlining show ever. Was in Munich,
nice.
I think.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And it sold out like, I think it was 1,400, I want to say.
Oh, man.
That was just a huge surprise to us. So, like, that memory to me is, I think, why. And also, I just have these memories. I love German fans so much. They're the best because they're so honest, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
So honest.
The
it's
amount
so
of
good.
Times that you're just holding back the tears.
Dude, one guy
came up
to me.
They're trying to be nice.
Yeah, he came up to me and he goes, I really love the last album a lot. I don't like the new one though.
Oh.
And then
right
he
feels.
Bought a bunch of merch. Like he was a fan.
Yeah.
But like he just wanted to tell me.
They don't. Yeah. There's something with the language or I don't know.
I love it.
It's like, yeah, I love everything, single thing about it. It's also like beneficial because if you say jump, they jump. If you say like, you know, scream, they scream. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you say like jump to a UK crowd, they're going to look around and be like, is everybody else going to jump? Because if
not, dude, wait till you play LA and try to get the crowd to do stuff.
Thing is, we're a foreign band, so I think they're going to be a bit more open to it. As I know, it's like, oh, they're from Sweden, very cool, I'm going to check them out.
If you're a local
band, they're like, oh, another, you know, try hard band.
Actually,
blah, blah, blah.
I went and saw Refused in the Hives.
Yes.
In last year, or maybe the year before in LA, and it was unbelievable. Mm. That crowd was great. But generally, right? I will say, the LA crowds have been difficult. Not in that, like, we always do great shows here, but they're just not as lively.
Yeah.
I would say.
It's kind of like Sweden. You won't get the Swedish crowd jumping.
See, we've never played Sweden. I'm like desperate to go to Sweden.
There's a reason why you haven't come up.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to go so bad, though.
It's beautiful, and it's going to be a big, like, you're not going to make money from it, but it's going to be worth it if you can go like at least, you know, plus minus zero.
So I'm like a big outdoors dude and I don't mind the cold. I love just the woods and like mountains and shit, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, probably minus 40 Fahrenheit right now. Is that correct? Wait, well, no, not minus 40.
I was going to say, that's really fucking cold.
Yeah, that's really cold. Wait, it's minus 10 Celsius or 15
Celsius. So it's probably around like 15 or something. Minus 10 Celsius to Fahrenheit. I'm going to look. 14.
Okay, well.
Not bad.
No, yeah, so it's pretty cold, and I've invested in, like, a North Face jacket and Dr. Martin boots.
There you
go. Yeah, and one of those Russian hats that you look like
I have
squirrel.
Two of those. I fucking love those hats.
Oh, I brought them out last week, and they're not great. Regretting that.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. So let's go through a little more Normandy history. So you did the yellow card tours. What year was that?
2016. It was the same year we released the first album.
Got it. So you released the first album. Dude, that is a great start. That's great nuts. Start.
Yeah.
To do your first tour after the album to 4,000 people a night.
We did a small release tour kind of in front of maybe 100, maybe 200 something a night in Europe.
Well, that's not bad either.
It was up and down, you know, everything from 40 people in a German bar to 250 in Czech Republic. So it's like, yeah. You know, those tour.
Right. Yeah. That's not bad either, though.
No,
that's
cool.
Pretty good. And then to go straight into yellow card, that's nuts.
And that made us gain a lot of momentum in those cities as well. They became kind of like key cities.
I would imagine.
Yeah. Like London and Cologne. Yeah.
That's great. And then you eventually toured with Ryan again, right?
Yeah, he supported us. Or like we did, because he was, you know, they broke up Yellow Card and he started his own ventures, and he asked us if we should do another tour where we do like a co-headline situation. But as he was only doing acoustic guitar, he didn't see that it would be good, like beneficial for him to go up after us, you know, sweating down the entire place, crowd surfing and all that good stuff. So he actually... You know, he played before us every night, which is a good sign of him having, you know, being very, what do you call it, humble.
Right.
He was very humble in that regard. Like, he knew that he had been touring for about 30 years, but he still said, like, I'll play before you guys. It's fine.
Yeah, I think he's someone that clearly respects and appreciates the actual show itself.
Yeah.
Right? Not as much like, this show is about me. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great.
He knew that people were gonna sing along to Ocean's Avenue either way.
Oh, of course. Right, absolutely.
So ever since then, we released White Flag, which, I mean, there's some really, really good stories about why that album not blew up, but I mean, like, the song White Flag hit 9 million streams the other day, and it's the album is something like 25
That's
million.
Congrats,
and to
dude.
Be a thank you, and to be a Swedish band signed to a pretty new small English label and to have that kind of success, I mean, so I want to say first, like, the songs are good and the song White Flag has something good. I'm not gonna like try to deny that, but we got a really good head start with that album as well. So we didn't have any PR team and we didn't do any, like, well, I barely did any interviews for that album. But we released first single, went pretty good, released the second single, which was White Flag, and that is when Spotify stepped in. So Alison Hagendorf found us through a friend on Instagram, and for some reason she DM'd us. Do you know who Alison Hagendorf is?
I don't.
She's the head of rock on Spotify. So she's
the
boss's boss's boss. And she's, you know, she's so cool. She's doing the New Year's show on Times Square. Like, she's been doing all those crazy stuff. Like, she's the biggest. And she found us, 10,000 followers on Instagram. She found us and DM'd us. It's like, you are good. Really, really, really good. She heard the White Flag single and... she just said, like, is there any management or something that I can contact? And we're like, yeah, sure. So she contacted the management and the label sort of in like a CC situation email. We didn't hear anything else like until 4 weeks after that, and she's added us to the Rock This playlist, which is like 4 million
That's
followers.
Huge. That
is,
That's
it is
huge.
It's the biggest thing you can have in playlisting with rock music, and you know, that's a big thing for us. And
that's a big thing for anyone. That'd be a big thing for us.
I mean, it's really, you kind of just wait for that to happen again. But I'm never ever gonna expect it or like rely on that to be a release factor. Like, we're gonna end up on Rock This, blah blah blah. But she put us on Rock This. And the thing is, when people end up, when bands end up on Rock This, we looked this up because there were other bands on that list. They stayed for about 4, maybe 6 weeks if it was like Bring Me the Horizon, whatever, some of the bigger acts. Mm-hmm. We were on that list thanks to her. I don't know why she did it. Maybe because we're Swedish and like we were small and she wanted to help out and the song was good. But we were on that list for something like 20 weeks.
Wow.
Yes, and like the song just went through the roof streaming wise obviously, but then we've looked back now, because when we tell this story, people are like, okay, no wonder why you have 9 million streams on that single. And I, you know, in Spotify artist page, you can look up the streams and where the streams come from and whatever. And that Rock This playlist gave us 1 million streams. So I'm happy that it didn't, you know,
that means there's some listeners going back.
Yeah. And it's so,
but also, who fucking cares?
Well, it's just a way for me to feel like, okay,
no wonder. It's like, yeah, that's why we wanted it.
That's right? A funny thing. It's like some of the German interviews we do, it's like, oh, you stream well, very, very well, but do you feel like you have real fans? And it's so German to say that, but it's, yeah. I guess they're like, they're planting a seed in my head where it's like, okay, so do we actually have any fans? But now we know. But at that point, it was like, okay, so is this album blowing up or is it just Spotify? Are we piggybacking on, you know, on Spotify playlisting? And just seeing that after that playlist, we had 1 million streams on the song, but it kept going. It was just, I don't know if we should... I don't know. I want to thank Allison, but at the same time, it's like she has given us something that I'm afraid that we'll never ever see again.
Well, dude,
like,
if
being
it means
on that
anything,
playlist for 20 weeks, it's like it's never gonna happen.
I mean, I listened to a bunch of your shit, right? Yeah. I can totally see the progression of your band. Like, I can
I really
think that the newest songs are gonna do so much for you. Like,
thank
I can't
you.
Imagine you guys not like blowing up even more than you already have from these. I think they're fucking awesome.
Thank you, man.
So,
but it's you know that if you're not touring, the only thing you have is like statistics when you're not touring.
I know it sucks, right?
Yeah. So you're sitting there watching like monthly listeners and whatever, and yeah. But I'm trying to shy away and like look away from that kind of stuff, especially because that, you know, that happened, and I don't ever want to sit and wait and update Rock This playlist every week to hope that Hostage is going to end up there or whatever.
Right,
so I'm
right.
trying to look forward to the release that's in a week. And like, I don't know when this is coming out, but yeah, I'm just trying to enjoy the moment sort of, and, you know, prepare for touring, I guess, because that's going to be crazy.
Well, let's talk about the new release.
Yeah, sure.
So this was you self-produced this?
I've produced all the records we've done, but this time I actually went further and I mixed the entire record as well.
Dude, it sounds amazing.
Thank you. I'm so happy with it because it was a bit of a... We had some extra time, you know, thanks to Corona. Mm-hmm. So I tried
for
a mix.
Sure.
I tried mixing Jericho and I sent it to the label. We had a mixer who did White Flag and Ingus as well. So he did Jericho as well. And we A-B'd those two. And it wasn't a matter of like what mix was best because both mixes were... like really good. I'm happy with my initial mix on that song, and I'm happy with his mix as well. But we had a moment where we actually talked about this, and it became so clear to me that if the mixes are both good, we need to pick the one that sounds the most like Normandy is supposed to sound
right.
like. So now we have an album, we have a product that came from our own demoing. We haven't had any other songwriters on the songs. We produced it ourselves. We mixed it ourselves, which means that from demoing to mixing, like the final product, everything that you hear, every single sound, every single, you know, twist of a knob to make the vocals go wider or whatever, everything is Normandy. So we cannot hide anymore behind a bad mix, or we cannot.
Right. And you're fully communicating your ideas at that point too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. If we would have somebody else mix it, it might sound better, but that's just going to be his or her interpretation of what they think that we want to sound like. Yeah. And it dawned upon me that for the first time ever, we have a product that we can stand behind and go like, if you like this, you like our band. If you don't like this, I don't know. We need to find a new mixer.
Right.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
It's just really cool. Mixing. I don't know. Since I started being better at producing and it became mixes.
See,
it's been a natural process. When the productions on the demo starts to sound like mixes, that's when you know you should try to take a leap of faith.
That's been my quarantine too. It's like I told you before, I do a lot of writing. Yeah. But it's always been like I have just been at the level of production where I can like fully communicate my ideas. But this quarantine, just with the extra time, I've just been mixing everything too, just training myself.
It's great.
I get it. Same shit.
It's so good. And it's actually just, you know, you just got to take a leap of faith. And also you need to, you know, A/B with current mixes. And
I still haven't made up my mind if I enjoy it.
There might come a time, you know, I think it's a matter of like not, I know that our mix isn't as good as the new post, post-human, blah, 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 Bring Me the Rise and record. Because that's mixed by...
I have no critique of your mixes. I thought they sounded fantastic.
Thank you, man.
But it's like, just it sounds when really cool.
Like, okay, so Dan Lancaster contacted me the other
day.
He
is like my idol.
Yeah. So I know mine too. So he
sent
me a DM.
Solo stuff is fucking unbelievable.
It is crazy.
It's ridiculously good.
Yeah. But he sent me a DM saying like, I love the new tracks and I love the mix. Who did it? And I was like, me, I did it. It's like, no way. That's so cool. I love it. Blah, blah, blah. And we started texting back and forth. And I was like, this is the best sort of like receipt that the mixes actually sound good. If he can say that the mix sounds good, that's going to be everything for me. Like, I don't give a fuck what my mom says about the mix.
Right.
I care what Dan says.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Dan is the king.
Dude, he's amazing. His songwriting and just
everything.
I love the way he puts together vocal phrases.
Yeah.
He's great.
It's crazy. The melodic work on that guy.
That's pretty wild, man. So you're getting recognition from all across the board. You found...
Yeah. Don't get me name dropping here, but that's like if Spotify playlisting was the big thing for White Flag, the famous people sliding into DMs is the one on this album. I'm blown away, and it's something for me to just cherish on my
so
own.
When does the album drop?
Next Friday. So next the 19th. Friday. Yeah.
So a week from now,
basically.
So why don't we I know we should be planning this not in the middle of the episode, but we'll drop this episode the day before.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Cool.
That would be really cool.
Thursday. So
next Thursday.
Actually, yeah, so it'll be the day before. So the album comes out tomorrow.
Yes!
We'll link the pre-save and everything in the episode bio. So if you're listening to this, go pre-save it right now.
Yeah.
You're the final few. Shame.
Here we go. The final
shame.
Few.
Yeah.
But they're your new favorite band. Heard it here first.
Yeah. The first, man. Sure. Yeah. It feels really cool. It feels great. And we've booked a dinner at like a semi Michelin restaurant, but it's called Punk Royale. And it's basically they pour vodka straight into your mouth and you eat Russian caviar from the table. It's like, but it's still like high culinary.
I would
experience.
Like to go there.
Sounds really cool, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we're going to celebrate the album release.
That's great.
Quarantine style. Yeah.
And you said you have a tour booked.
We have a tour booked. It's been booked for a while now, to be honest.
Right. What's the tour? Yeah.
It's a European / UK tour. Like our favorite cities. And it's, everything from, you know, Manchester, London, Munich, Cologne, Berlin, all that, you know, all the good stuff, and all the way down to, I don't think we're doing Italy and France this time around. I think we're doing Vienna. That's about as south as we'll go. And then like Prague, Czech Republic, stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think we're talking about Russia around the same time. And then
Have you done Russia before?
No, it's the first time. We had everything like booked for Russia.
We did too.
But then Corona came, so.
Yep, same thing. Same for us.
Man.
Oh, well.
Isn't that a bummer?
It's a bummer, man, but I'm glad to hear you guys got something on the books. I think you'll probably be back to touring far before we will here.
I am actually, yeah, I'm semi-vaccinated. I've got the first shot. Yeah,
you
I
did.
Got the first shot.
How's that going where you are?
It's going pretty well, I think, but I think they'll be done by summer. So
yeah, we're not
going
to be done
we'll
for a while. It is a mess.
Dude, my best hope is to get one in like June right now.
I don't think that we'll be back till next summer.
No, me neither. Like, not on full scale. I think what might happen is they downscale the venues to like 100 cap. And we'll just have to take, you know, we won't come home richer than we left the building, but
well, hopefully
we'll have
people
some
realize
great sweaty
though,
experience.
You know, like how valuable live entertainment is, and you know, if they have to scale down venues, I would anticipate ticket prices going up.
Yeah, and you can as well. You can do like two nights back to back as well, mm-hmm. which is pretty fun. So it might be
it'll
a longer
be interesting
tour.
To see. Interesting to see how it rolls out, and especially in different parts of the world.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to do it. We just have to accept the situation.
Are other bands already playing in your area at all?
No, not here.
No,
they were up like last summer. They had like 50 people in the crowd. Like that was the max. But now it's down to 8, just for I don't know, for the sake of it, just to get rid of this stuff, really.
Right. Ugh, nightmare.
Yeah, nightmare.
Hopefully soon. Hopefully
yeah, it was
soon.
Just the thing that I was looking forward to the most this summer was festivals. We were finally doing, like, we've been crossing off the list of UK festivals for some reason. But well, probably because the label is there and everything. But it's
which ones were you doing?
So far we've done Download, Reading, Leeds, 2000 Trees, and now we were doing Slam Dunk.
Oh fuck, man!
Yeah,
we're doing Slam Dunk.
You're doing Slam Dunk this year. Well,
yeah.
So you probably know all about that.
Yes, I
don't
do.
Think they've actually gone out with all the stuff about that yet, but you probably received the emails about it then we'll
I
see you there.
But I did hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see you there.
Well, that'd be cool. Yes. That rules.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Rules.
I can't wait to see you guys.
Amazing.
I was just going to say, like, do you think you'll ever get over to the US so I can see you play?
Oh, there's plans for that. We're talking
I'm sure.
to a bunch of people, you know.
Very
like,
cool.
Like always. Very cool. Yeah.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, did we miss anything?
A bunch of stuff, man. There's so much to be said.
I
it's
know
so funny
a
about
ton.
Podcasts, though, because I've stopped listening to music since maybe 3-4 years ago when I started like doing production full time, and I stopped listening to music in my free time. I listen every Friday to like the new Music Friday list and whatever.
Yeah.
But then I really got into podcasts, and I listened to podcasts maybe, you know, 2-3 hours a day.
That's me too.
In commuting and whatever, and between bouncing stuff. And it's just become this amazing platform to just have conversations. And like this could easily have been an interview, but it feels more relaxed and doesn't feel like you're throwing questions in my face.
If I'm being honest, I kind of selfishly started this podcast because I knew I wasn't going to have the social interaction that I wanted this year. Right?
Okay,
so I wanted a place where I could force my friends to talk to me. But on top of that, I mean, just meeting new people and hearing like cool stories has been awesome.
Yeah,
for sure.
Man. Like it's best.
And you know, there's a lot of content out there, right? Like, there have been so many podcasts started during this time that like there's an abundance of people being interviewed on podcasts and sharing their stories that there's, it's just, I love it right now. Like
I still listen
to the interviews with people that I've had on other podcasts just to see what other stuff, you know, they have after I hear how interesting their stories are in general, you know?
Yeah. I get it.
All right, dude. So look, let's go into tour story stuff.
Tour story territory. Yeah.
Tour story territory. I know you've already told some.
Yeah, but that's like the good stuff.
Right.
Like the happy moments.
Except for the van shit.
Yeah, the van shit.
Right.
What? You just want me to rant?
You can rant. You can give me, you can do more than one. It doesn't matter. And I'll probably usually what happens is we end up just sharing them back and forth here.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Because you'll tell me one, and then I'll think of one, and then that, you know.
Yeah, it's just there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, there's the thing is, like, it's so boring to talk about, oh, we drank so much, or we did that kind of thing, and we did this, and we smoked this, and whatever. And it's, you know, because everybody has those stories, and not everybody can handle it, and that's when it becomes funny. And it's like, oh, he passed out before the show.
Right,
wow,
right,
crazy,
right,
dude. But it's been a bit of, like, food poisoning going on.
Ooh.
And we've, yeah, stuff like that. I threw up just on stage in...
Really?
In Leeds on the Yellow Card tour.
Oh, and, my God. That's
well,
awful.
Just side stage, walking up to the stage.
It's like right in the middle of the stage.
Some people saw it, some people didn't. But the show was cool. And, I mean, there was the Palladium show that I mentioned before. Right before, that was one of the first tour we did with In-Ear Systems. And we had this rack unit on stage, as you shouldn't, and it was, you know, massive subs, and the computer handling our backing track system was stood on that rack unit, and, you know, the shaking and everything. So that was one of the things with that night. The entire backing track with click tracks and everything just skipped 10 seconds.
Oh, God.
In the middle of a song.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
That's really brutal. And, you know, in front of 4,500 something people, right, trying to introduce yourself as the next thing, you know. But the thing that happened before that show was that we were walking up backstage, well, side stage, and we put it, you know, we put the in-ears in and we turned on the systems, and there was this tuning bass guitar being looped in our ears. It sounded like it was a loop for sure. There wasn't somebody tuning a bass guitar, but it sounded like, you know, just a boom, boom, boom.
That's interesting.
Boom. And that went on for the entire show in our ears. Yeah. And
you couldn't just rescan?
We did the rescan. So we postponed the show about 2-3 minutes. We skipped one song. And it was like tight deadlines and everything.
We
couldn't be the bond. You couldn't ask for about 5 extra minutes.
Right.
Yellow Card were playing 2.5 hours. So that wasn't really something. Yeah, no. Farewell tour. But yeah,
shit.
So we restarted all the systems. We talked to the engineers from Yellow Card to turn off their systems and everything. Nothing worked. It was a big venue, though, so I think, like, there was venues both below and on the side of that venue. They might have done some testing or whatever of systems, because it sounded really like a testing signal.
Yeah.
Something you play to just see if you get signal. So that was a bit disturbing.
I actually like this topic, because in-ears have always been, like, a big struggle for bands that people just don't even know what it is and what we're talking about. So, like, in ears, that's like when you see people with the headphones in on stage, you're hearing whatever you want in your ears. So, like, my in-ear mix has my vocal the louder than anyone else's vocal, right, and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But especially at, like, festivals or, like, what you're talking about, big venues with multiple rooms, people are fighting for those frequencies. So you'll get a lot of, like, weirdness in your ears sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the best, sometimes it's the worst. And, like, even, like, I don't know, we played a festival, I think it was Leeds Festival, and, you know, I just lost the entire backing track and click track and everything in the middle of a song. And, like, what do I do? So happily, on a festival that magnitude, like, I think it was a tent with 3,000 something people. And if you're on that type of size of stage, the stage is actually going to be very quiet.
Right.
So I could just remove one of my in-ears so I could hear my own voice. And then I knew the key of the song and I just needed to follow our drummer. So that was pretty fine. Like, I managed to get through the song and I switched pack with our drum tech that was behind the stage. And then I was good to go. But in other situations, when you play, like, a tight 150 cap venue, the people are going to be louder than anything else.
Right.
So that's when it becomes a real issue. And that has happened, of course, as well. And you blow your voice, basically. That's what happens. That's why you use in-ears to start off with. It's like, you shouldn't use excessive force. Shouldn't blow your voice. And
right.
Yep. If you lose your inners, you don't have any wedges or anything. So it's,
right. I had this one show we played that in the middle of the set, some other band must have turned on their rig, and all I could hear in my ears was someone being like, check. I can't hear it. What's going on? Check. I can't hear it in my ears. And it was just in my ears the whole time.
Was it one of the opening band? Like, was it a festival?
I think it was it was a festival. And I don't know for sure, but I think it was like, I think it might have been Killswitch.
Oh shit.
Or Breaking Benjamin. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm trying to stay thankful here.
yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Who's I'm trying to sing and someone's just like, it's so loud too. It really was like they were cupping the mic.
It is always so loud. Yeah, it's so always funny. Overpowering.
Yeah, because all you reason. Lead vocalists need to have your vocal so fucking loud. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, I actually accidentally swapped pack once with our bass guitarist. He did not enjoy that show.
Oh,
I did.
God.
I did. I can sing on key even if I don't hear my own voice. And it's like, I get the resonance in my cheekbone kind of, and I can stay on pitch.
See, I actually do. I do a similar thing. Like when I started doing this on our last tour, I actually turned my vocal off. In my ears, because just having my ears blocked was enough for me to just hear my voice in my head.
Yeah, I'm getting closer and closer to that, so that it's becoming more of a me having my inner system on like one or two, basically. Right. So I hear the click and I hear the track and I know what key it is. But it's like walking around in your own living room and singing.
Exactly.
You're so chilled, and that is I don't know. That's the only way.
It really is a game changer.
It's the only way you could sing for an hour every single night for 4 weeks in a row. It's like,
those bands that still just use monitors. Like I saw the Foo Fighters maybe 2 years ago.
Oh.
And they're just using stage. Like they're like straight up just rock and roll. No click, no backing tracks.
Yeah.
You know, monitor.
As long as it's
just
quiet enough
the whole time.
On stage. I guess he's... wedges are pretty loud though.
Like I'm sure.
I would guess he has tinnitus. So.
He's been playing loud music for a long time.
Yeah, Nirvana didn't use earplugs.
No, I doubt it. Well, listen, dude. Thank you for sharing.
no problemo.
This was great. A lot of good info, a lot of great stories. I'm super stoked about your band, man. I really am.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see what happens over the next year. And I'll be following and we'll definitely keep in touch for sure.
Yeah, man. We're like sitting here in our igloos in Sweden and we're looking at the world and we just want to get out there. We want to go to the States and we want to go to Australia. We just want to get out there. So we're still in our womb kind of, but
yeah,
we see things on the horizon and people like you reaching out is, you know, key.
Oh,
for
dude.
Us
well,
to
yeah, grow. Absolutely. And I appreciate you being available and coming on and your music and everything. So, before we wrap up, do you want to just share where people can find your band, your personal socials, YouTube stuff, all that?
Yeah, so we're on, well, you could just Google Normandy Band like everybody else. It's the way to do it. You'll find the Spotify, you'll find whatever we do. You'll find all the cool interviews and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And just Google Normandy Band. Make sure to don't Google just Normandy because it's the biggest region in France. where the D-Day happened in the World War II. So you're just going to find some old war memorabilia. So Google Normandy Band and you're all set.
Cool, man. Well, thank you again. This was a lot of fun. And remember, album out tomorrow, even though it's not actually tomorrow. But tomorrow as this episode airs. And that's it.
Thank you.
Thanks again, man.
Cool.
The city sleeps and I'm awake. I'm stuck in conversation. My mind is running red lights to escape this situation. Pretend and play along. I rewind, reset, restart, repeat again when morning comes. I've been counting down from 10, hoping it will make it end. I shut my eyes, I shut my mind, and hope it passed me by. I'm a broken soul.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.